Good evening, Michael Malice here with makeup on my face and love in my heart for all of you with this delicious new dose of nightshade. That's right, I was at Fox earlier and they cake that stuff on and it does not come off, no matter how good it makes you look and how much you want to take it off. You know you should leave it on, especially when you go to the gym and then you can wipe it off and have it look all orange and have them wonder what kind of adobo asshole is wiping his ass with our gym towels. The Russian kind. So one of the issues with the wall, and I'm sure if you guys haven't seen yesterday's episode, I'm sure I've seen it. If you haven't seen yesterday's episode, do go and look at the insanity of the contrast between Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi and what President Trump were asking for in the negotiations. We're going to move this a little to the right. The issue is, look, on the one hand, you have President Trump and the congressional Republicans, but President Trump is one guy. He really is the one running the show and insisting on the shutdown. So that's one person. On the other hand, you have 235 Democrats in the House, and Nancy Pelosi has her point of view, but you have 235 people with opinions. And whenever you have 235 people with egos who are accomplished, some of them aren't going to agree with you, and things are going to get difficult to manage, especially as time goes on, more and more people are going to fall away and start to break. It's just human nature. So Steny Hoyer, who is the House Majority Leader, former and current, was on Cavuto's show on Fox Business today. And Neil asked him some interesting – by the way, Neil is like, I think, 60. Can you look up Neil Cavuto, how old he is on Wikipedia? It's C-A-V-U-T-O. I think he's like literally 60. He is. It's really creepy how young he looks because he just doesn't age. Also, when you do his show, he sends you a letter in the mail of thanks. And I'm at home and I get a letter from Fox and I'm like, holy shit. And then it's thanks for doing my show, Neil Cavuto. And I'm like, you know, an email would have sufficed. How old is he?
61.
Yeah, okay, let's play this clip, and it's just mind-boggling that he's 61.
Any other
That's Neil on the left.
You yourself be open for wall funding?
Look, I think barriers
Deception.
Are part of the solution.
So you don't share Nancy Pelosi's view that a wall is immoral?
Look, he won't make eye contact.
Look, I think it depends upon what a wall is used for, whether it's moral or immoral. If it's protecting people, it's moral. If it's imprisoning people, it may well be immoral. But
Pause it. The fuck kind of wall imprisons people? It's a wall. It's not a maze. I'm a prisoner of the wall. The only people who are prisoners of the wall are Pink Floyd. If the wall is used to imprison... Wait. Even theoretically, I thought the argument was the wall is a waste of money. The wall is dehumanizing and offensive. Are they going to take all those kids from those concentration camps in Texas and entomb them into the wall once and for all, solving our migrant problem? I haven't heard it, but this is an idea that bears considering. Because, you know, disgraced comedian Louis C.K. has that bit, definitely but maybe, where he says it's definitely terrible that there are all these kids with peanut allergies, but maybe this problem could solve itself in a month. No, it's definitely terrible, but maybe. So this could be one of those situations. Let's play the rest of this.
The issue is we want border security. We want to make sure that people who come in the United States of America are authorized to do so, and we know that they've come in. We don't want contraband. We don't want drugs coming in. We don't want dangerous people coming into the country.
Understood.
So we're for border security, and I think we can get there. But very frankly, creating the environment of hostage taking, i.e. the not only employees, but people who rely on government.
Pause it. And hey, I'm not one of these, like, conservatives like blah, 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 Mexico. But you gotta admit, you know what a lot of these Mexican gangs like to do? Take hostages. Like, they literally take hostages and, like, mail body parts and stuff. They're really bad. So I get how you could be against hostage taking as a metaphor, but hostage taking as a reality is also kind of bad. Maybe it's like a silver medal in this competition, you know, chopping people up and their families. I don't know. I'm not a law enforcement guy. Maybe I'll have to ask Keith. play some more.
And then saying, either you negotiate with me as I want to do, or I'm going to keep the hostages.
Well, let me ask you,
I mean, that is what hostage taking is all about, isn't it? When you take a hostage, you say, let's negotiate, and then I'll give you the hostage, not here. What kind of hostage taker frees the hostages and says, all right, now let's talk about my ransom, now that your child has been returned to you happily and healthily? What's that? Hello? Yeah, it's not how it works. And I get how they think it's unfair that the guy, I don't even know who the hostages theoretically are. Are they the people not getting paid? I mean, getting like a furlough when you know you're going to get that check when you go back to work isn't really a hot, like being unemployed. Let's suppose President Trump just fired all those non-essential workers. Are they hostages? Hostages would be like if he makes them go to work and then they can't go home. He's making them go home. This is the opposite of hostage taking. Hostage taking is you can't go home. This is you got to go home. It's not the same. It's the opposite. And you know who you can't really take hostage? Someone who's not essential. Like, your daughter is essential to your family. Your wife. Even the dog is somewhat essential. Those are hostages. Like, that crazy old lady down the street? Yeah, it's a shame they got her, but what are you going to do? Anna Navarro filing her nails.jpg. Okay, let's play some more of this.
Remember,
this,
the president
though,
asked...
understand, and you're saying he's not budging, and that, you know, his people argue you guys aren't budging now that he's made these offers. But I do want to ask you this. They're insistent, apparently, in planning for a State of the Union address, and even sort of giving an opportunity to scope things out there to have that address. Do you think the president is within his right to have a State of the Union address in the well of the House?
Within his right? Now, that's a technical term, and the answer to that is no. The president comes here at the invitation of the Congress, and particularly the House, to address the Congress of the United States.
Nancy Pelosi didn't disinvite him. She didn't think it was a good idea, right?
Neil, I'm not conversant with apparently the president said something. I didn't hear that, and I don't know what response there's been.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Been.
I wasn't clear. That's my fault. Yeah.
But that's all right, Neil.
Nancy Pelosi didn't disinvite him. She just didn't think it was a good idea. Would actually prefer during this shutdown that he delivered in writing, if he delivered it at all. Do you think that the president, he said, no, I want to go there in person and address everybody, would you, Steny Hoyer, be open to that?
Sure.
Oh, stop it. Okay, good. We're good. We got him. So, this is very interesting because a word around town, between you and me, is that there's always been beef between Steny Hoyer and Nancy Pelosi. And that, to me, it's being touted as him throwing her under the bus. That's not how I read that at all. That, to me, sounds like he hasn't been party to her little schemes. And he's basically playing catch-up. And he doesn't really know where she's going with all this. So any kind of discord in Washington, across parties, within parties, I'm in favor of. I think it's absolutely great. And now there's a story I want to talk about that we got short on time yesterday, which is really big news. It's about Cleopatra. Now, most Americans think that Cleopatra was a fictional mythical figure like Hercules or Samson or Jesus, but she was actually a real person and the last of the Ptolemies and ruled Egypt back in the day and was memorialized by William Shakespeare along with Mark Antony in the famous play Antony and Cleopatra. And now historians in Egypt are saying that their tomb will soon be uncovered. They believe they've identified the hidden location, the crypt, where the leaders are buried together. Quote, the long-lost tomb of Antony and Cleopatra will be eventually uncovered. The burial site has finally been estimated to be in the region of Taposiris Magna, which is 18 miles away from Alexandria. This is according to an Egyptian archaeologist, Zahi Hawass. He's 71 years old, has vast experience in archaeology, and said, I hope to find the tomb of Antony and Cleopatra soon. I do believe they are buried in the same tomb. We are so close to discover the accurate location of the tomb. We are on the right way. We know exactly where we have to dig. That is, I mean, mind-boggling. Her full name was Cleopatra the VII Philopater. She was the last active ruler of the Ptolemaic Kingdom in Egypt. And according to popular belief, she and Mark Antony committed suicide in August 30 BC, when she was 39, by allowing an asp, which is a viper, to bite them. And some claim she was murdered, and say discovering her body will help provide evidence to prove that Mark Antony, or as he was known at the time, Marcus Antonius, was a Roman politician and general, and he was assigned to Rome's eastern provinces, including the client kingdom of Egypt, which Cleopatra was then ruling. This comes days after an ancient royal hall dating back to the era of Ramses II was previously discovered near to the identified Cleopatra site, which was unearthed below soft brick buildings and commercial residential areas. The hall used to hold such royal celebrations as the Jubilee Feast. So it's going to be crazy what's in there. And the other thing that's interesting is a lot of times these old tombs end up being looted. But if this has been buried and hidden for that long, there's a good chance that it remains sealed. There's a very famous picture of the doors to King Tut's tomb, and the rope is still around them after it was literally centuries when they discovered it. So they were like, oh my God, this is going to be amazing. And King Tut, as we all know, did not disappoint. Now, I'm going to skip the next segment, and there's another video I want to watch, because as you know, yesterday we talked on The Spin about the insanity with those Covington kids and how the corporate press treated them. I was on a Gutfeld show, One Smart Guy and Greg Gutfeld today, I think it airs tomorrow, discussing this at length, the malfeasance of the press. I've been hitting it hard on Twitter in the last couple of days, especially at conservatives who are like, they keep making these mistakes. Joy Behar, on that screeching harpy fest known as The View, had some interesting things to say today, and I want to play this clip.
Social media, honey, attacked Kentucky private school kids for this confrontation with the Native American Vietnam veteran.
What the fuck are you talking about?
When different rallies converged in D.C. Here's the first clip that went viral. Take a look. So the school kids were blamed for being the aggressors. But then the extended footage was released that showed a group of black Israelites mocking the kids and the Native American. Take a look.
We are here to tell you what you have to do. You have to come away from the Lord. You have to come away from your religions, philosophies, and doctrines, and start worshiping the true and living power, which his name is Yahweh. That's who's the Most High God.
That's right.
Bastards over there wearing Make America Great.
That's right.
Lord Billy. Hold on. Let me give you guys a little background on these fuckers. The black Israelites are of the belief that they're the real Jews and people like me are of the devil. And one of the things they teach you in the Torah, which is the Old Testament, first five books of the Bible, is you are never allowed to pronounce God's name. So when you see it written, you say Hashem, which is not what the letters spell out, because it's a euphemism, because you're not even supposed to utter what's written as God's name. And it's been degenerately referred to as Jehovah in English. That's kind of a close alliteration. And that's what he was trying to say. So if he wants to call himself a Jew, no Jew is ever going to say that out loud and consider himself, you know, at all respectful of the Jewish faith. Play the rest of this.
Are you not angry at that?
So many people admitted they made snap judgments before these other facts came in. But is it that we just instantly say that's what it is based on what we see in that moment and then have to walk stuff back when it turns out we're wrong? Why is that? Do we keep making the same mistake?
Because we're desperate to get Trump out of office. That's why.
Not everybody, though.
No, she's right.
What does that have
she owned
to
it.
Do?
But pause it. Do you know what's sick? It's like Whoopi's like, why is it? Oh, Ann Coulter had a great tweet where she said, August 2018, Alex Jones is a menace. He has to get kicked off of Twitter. 2019, journalists on Twitter. We need to kill these children and their families. I'm paraphrasing. You can find the tweet. I retweeted it. What's sick is, benefit of the doubt. The air conditioner is not working in here. I'm sweating worse than What's a good punchline for that?
A pig in flannel pajamas.
No, that's not funny. I'm sweating worse than, Gino when he has the shakes. The thing is, you see the first video, okay, you have your, let's give everyone the best case scenario. You have preconceived notions, you get the benefit of the doubt, you think it's the kids, blah, blah, blah. You see the second one, you're like, oh, shit, I was wrong. Why was I wrong? Because I wanted to get Trump so bad. That's not funny. Like, I'm sorry to sound like a fucking feminist, but, like, if you are at all a person with any kind of decency and your mental hangups cause you to get the story wrong, that is the difference between someone who is intellectually honest and someone who is an ideologue. I've had it happen where I've caught myself, people called me out. I'm like, wow, you know what? You're right. It doesn't happen a lot, and it doesn't feel good, but it's like, you know what? I'm going to be better in the future. Because now that you know you make this, have a tendency to make this kind of mistake, it's like, at the very least, it's selfish to be like, well, next time I'm gonna get caught, people are gonna laugh at me. I might as well, you know, shape up. But she's like, ha ha ha, I want to get Trump out of office so bad, it's fucked up my perceptions. And yeah, what are you gonna do about it? I mean, really, Joy Behar, it's just. And I gotta tell you, I'll give you an example of this. Can you put the video for a second without playing it, just the picture. The working on this book with the new right and the alt-right has fucked with my perception so much, I just assumed she was Jewish. She's not. She ain't one of us. She's Italian. Joy Behar is not. So when people go after her, all the Nazis on Twitter, you could point out, we're not taking her. Okay, play the rest of this.
I think that's the reason. I think a press jumps the gun a lot.
That is not a Jewish woman. Keep that in mind. And by the way, ladies, that outfit, I got in a big fight with my ex. That pattern is what fat chicks wear to try to look skinnier. Navy or black with white polka dots. I think it's to break up the outline. I don't know what it is. It's the uniform for fat chicks. Don't wear it. It looks terrible. And if you're heavy, great. You can be heavy and look great. Don't wear this outfit. It fucks it up. Okay, play the rest of this.
Because we have so much circumstantial evidence against this guy that we basically are hoping that, you know, Cohen's got the goods and what have you. But, and so it's wishful thinking.
Right.
Pause it. But, you know, here's the thing. Those kids aren't him. So even if you, like, let's suppose magic wand killed all those children, that still wouldn't get Trump. It would just get him. So this is one of the things that I talked about before when he got elected. You know that if you can't get the big bad guy, you have to go after, like, the people around him. And you have to settle for second best. And that's exactly what she's basically saying. She's like, I want to get Trump. Can't get Trump. I'll settle for some teens who are, worst case scenario, are complete douchebags. I mean, I think this is very sad and unfortunate thinking, and it leads to some very, very negative consequences. As I said yesterday, the Daily News doubled down and went after the whole school, saying that, you know, they dress up in blackface, and there's a picture of them yelling at a kid from the other basketball team, and the kid's black. And obviously, if he was white, they wouldn't be yelling at the kid from the other team. That's not how sports works, dummy. Read a book. Okay, play the rest of this.
Talk about the kids in this particular
all right.
confrontation, since that's the question at hand.
You also have Trump supporter.
Oh, that was it. Okay, so I think the affect is very disturbing. I talked to Gutfeld today, and he was one of them. At first, he just tweeted out, I hate teenagers. We all do, Greg. They're awful. And then we saw it. He walked it back, and he's like, you know what? This is I got it wrong. And then people are still piling on him. So it's just like, at a certain point, what can you do? Time machine? The only way to judge whether an apology is sincere or valid is looking at how people will behave in the future. And now for our last segment, here's something that we like to call hipster history. You probably haven't heard of it. Now, this story I saw on Twitter because of Steve Saylor, who is an alt-right journalist, and it is a fascinating story of who he considers to be our greatest vice president. Do we not have the text?
Oh, yeah. The text?
Yeah, it's...
What text? Hold on.
All the message I sent to you guys about Richard Mentor Johnson? Did it not get sent? I'll just read it from my phone. There it is. Okay. Richard Mentor Johnson, let's have his picture up here. He was the vice president under Martin Van Buren from 1837 to 1841. There he is. Not counting a 9-month leave of absence he took from the vice presidency to manage his tavern. And now we're back at the Cleopatra stuff. Okay. He was elected with the campaign slogan, Rumpsy Dumpsy, Colonel Johnson killed Tecumseh. Tecumseh? This is obviously a reference to killing Native Americans. It's also kind of, I'm no linguist, but it's interesting to see, this probably speaks to the dialect of the time, if it must have rhymed back then, because now it doesn't. He belonged to a shadowy dynasty in the Western Cotton Belt known as the Family, was backed for the vice presidency in 1836 by both Andrew Jackson and Davy Crockett, not Tecumseh, I'm guessing, but was... When he was dropped from the Democratic re-election ticket in 1840, he ran for re-election anyway. According to Wikipedia, his rambling, incoherent speeches, maybe in part due to the stuff from the tavern, on the re-election trail were poorly received and touched off a riot in Cleveland. Johnson still ended up winning 48 electoral votes in 1840 as an independent candidate for vice president, which is more than every libertarian candidate ever combined. And that's not too bad. I mean, very few people have run for vice president on their own. I don't think that's a thing. He failed in re-election to the Senate in 1828 when he tried to introduce his daughters by his, quote, octoroon slave wife into polite society. He pointed out that, quote, unlike Jefferson, Clay, Poindexter, and others, I married my wife under the eyes of God. And apparently he has found no objections. Now, as a United States senator, his biggest project, I'm not making this up, was a campaign from 1822 to 1823 to fund a U.S. government expedition to explore and conquer the inside of the earth. Because he was an advocate of his friend John C. Sims' hollow earth theory. John Sims is from the Cleveland area. All that's left of this moment in American history is the hollow earth monument in Hamilton, Ohio. We have a picture of that. There it is. So Sims argued that the earth, and the 1800s in America, by the way, were a bonkers time. All of that shit is swept under the rug because people focus on the Civil War, Reconstruction, Uncle Tom's Cabin. There were so many little crazy movements that are like Oneida, look that up, that are like hilarious. And as science was becoming a thing, they didn't really know what it was. So there's all these whack job theories. This is one of them. So Sims's hollow earth theory argued that the earth, and in fact, all celestial bodies, isn't a solid ball, but a hollow shell, which contains a set of smaller concentric shells, which are all a few thousand miles thick. Each one is open at the two poles, which are giant gaping holes thousands of miles across. Put out that picture again. That's supposed to be like the North Pole. So the Earth is basically an asshole. Each one is open. Okay, so the edges of the hole are rounded. So you could walk up to the hole, keep going around the rim, and wind up all the way around on the inside surface. If you did, you might not even notice because the interior is just as warm, well-lit, and habitable as the outside. And he said that the inside of the outermost shell would have plants, animals, lakes, and oceans, just like our side. Okay, now, the genius in his theory is that he had a bunch of explanations for why this hasn't been discovered before, and evidence for why it is true. The rims of the pole holes, which he called verges, were conveniently placed just past where people had explored to this point. And for an explorer wandering around the area, the lip would look conveniently similar to what you'd see on a completely solid ball of dirt, right? So you got a ball of dirt, you're at the edge, you're not going to see past under it. So he contended the very tip of the verge would be the coldest, iciest place on Earth, and it warms up as you head past the rim into the interior. He also argued that an explorer could head north towards the big hole, walk up to and along the verge with the mistaken impression he'd reached the North Pole, then head back south at some other longitude, incorrectly convinced that he'd reached the very top of a solid sphere. It's like if you're walking in a balloon, right? You think it's flat because the balloon is curving. So with this, even though it's kind of like a curved balloon, you think it's a straight line. Keeps scrolling up. More. Okay, so here's some more bits of evidence that he has. Number one. There are great schools of fish that migrate north every season and don't come back in the south, thereby violating the law of conservation of seafood. He argued the fish simply swam around the rim into the interior oceans. They're just doing laps around the earth. That's number one. Number two, notice that it's colder in the Midwest, America's Midwest, than parts of Europe at the same latitude. London is further north than Duluth. He said it's because the northern hole dips further south over North America. And, of course, the closer you are to the verge, the colder it gets. And the northern verge, for some reason, is centered on magnetic north instead of true north. And finally, there's all this crap washing out of the ocean along the north shores of Europe, driftwood trees that look tropical in nature. So he thought they were coughed up from the temperate inner oceans. Why they weren't just coughed up from stuff from the south, southern ocean on the outside, I don't know. But that's the theory. He even wrote a book about this, which is public domain, which I was going to download and not read. His name is Sims, S-Y-M-M-E-S. If someone wants to read it, go ahead. There was a lot of this Hollow Earth literature at the time, and some of them became famous, and some, like his, have received the dustbin of history. So on that note, I will wish you all sweet dreams.